Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's July 28th. We've got currently 66 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Under cloudy skies here in Old Town, Heber City reporting 67 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch. Back on this Tuesday, we're looking at partly cloudy skies as we go throughout the afternoon. We will have a chance of those pop-up afternoon showers and thunderstorms developing. Again, not everyone's going to see them, but that chance will exist. High temperatures will climb into the upper 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the lower 90s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Wednesday, look for partly cloudy skies. Again, a slight chance of a pop-up afternoon storm. Very similar temperatures. Highs will climb into the mid to upper 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the low to mid 90s in the Heber Valley. Now, as we make our way into your Thursday, that ridge of high pressure, the heat dome, gets much closer to Utah, and that's going to dry us out even more. And as it dries us out, it's going to really start to heat us back up. So we're heading back into the low 90s for high temperatures by Thursday afternoon in the Park City area. Meanwhile, for the Heber Valley, temperatures will jump into the upper 90s for highs by the time we get towards your Thursday. But of course, as we like to say in this summer heat this summer, you haven't seen anything yet, because by the time we get towards Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, that's when the core of the heat arrives. So for our friends in Park City, we're going to be looking at weekend temperatures climbing into the mid-90s for highs in Park City. We're going to see those temperatures jumping into the triple digits between 100 and 105 for the Heber Valley. Again, that's going to be for your Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, as that heat dome, that high pressure ridge, is right on top of us. But because the high pressure is on top of us, that will also keep us very dry out there as well, with those dry conditions sticking around through the upcoming weekend. Now, as we head in early next week, that high pressure will start to back off just a little bit, but it'll still be pretty toasty out there with highs in the lower 90s for us in Park City. And we'll see those temperatures still climbing into the upper 90s in the Heber Valley, but somewhat cooler by that time, but still looking dry even heading into early next week. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott, taking a look at the agenda for Wednesday's County Council meeting. Later on, from the Park City Community Foundation CEO Jill Zero, along with the Youth Access Manager for Youth United, Junior Vieira, telling us more about that. And Summit County Fair Manager Tyler Orgill in with some details on the opening of the fair this week. Summit County family is suing Park City School District and former Superintendent of Schools Jill Gilday for alleged discrimination and racism. KPCW's Christine Weller reports.
Kelly and Ryan Bullitt filed a lawsuit July 23rd on behalf of their two children against Park City School District and Jill Gilday. Gilday served as superintendent for the district for 6 years and retired in 2024. The Bullets allege their kids, who are African American and now 14 and 17 years old, faced discrimination and harassment while attending Ecker Hill Middle School and Treasure Mountain Junior High from 2021 to 2023. Peter Sorensen, an attorney for the Bullets, said the Bullet children faced repeated harassment.
What had happened to them was sort of a pattern of racial discrimination. They were called horrible names. They were treated differently than other students that were not minorities.
According to the Third District Court lawsuit, one child experienced at least 4 instances of harassment based on race, the other child at least 17 incidents. The lawsuit alleges the district showed, quote, deliberate indifference to reports of race-based harassment, and the failure to take action, quote, enabled future race-based assaults. Court documents say both children attended therapy and suffered extreme emotional distress due to the racial discrimination, including anxiety, fear, and depression. The lawsuit also cites a federal investigation that found over 180 incidents of harassment in the district from 2021 to 2023. The Bullets and their two children were part of the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights Anonymous Investigation. The office found the district did not, quote, take effective steps to eliminate a hostile environment based on race, including by not investigating all allegations of race-based harassment. Sorensen said it's up to the district to make things right.
It appears there was a pattern of treating students wrong. And we believe that our client's rights were violated in this situation and that the school district should make it right.
The district signed an agreement to resolve the investigation in March 2024. It agreed to revise harassment policies and procedures, provide individual remedies for students, and implement a plan to educate students and parents on reporting harassment. The Bullets are seeking compensation exceeding $300,000 and a jury trial. The district told KPCW it does not comment on pending or imminent litigation. Gilday did not respond to KPCW's request for comment sent to an email address at Colorado Early Colleges, where she is the CEO. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council meets Wednesday starting at about 3:30 in work session at the Richens Auditorium. In the studio with a preview is Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning,
Leslie. Oh, let's get your microphone on.
Oh.
You
can leave it off if you like. That's fine.
First, last week we saw some devastating flooding. This isn't the first time flooding's happened in Summit County. I remember in Oakley we had it several years back. But residents in Wanship have asked the county for help to create some drainage and runoff mitigation infrastructure at the Wanship Cemetery. So is there financial assistance available?
Perhaps. I think what we'll start with is maybe some technical help. I have a meeting actually today about this issue, and we're going to offer some engineering. I think Public Lands and Natural Resource Department can also help with some long-term solutions to mitigate future flooding. And I think if there's financial help that's needed, I'm sure that the county can step up in that regard as well.
Yeah, I mean, more than just the fact that it's kind of a respectful thing to do, I mean, do we have some, like, health concerns just given, if you start unburying bones?
I think maybe you probably do. I think that, to me, what I've seen, it looked a little bit more maybe disrespectful than it did about like a health concern. But sure, we want to ensure that people's loved ones are secure and safe, and we would like this to not happen again. Again, but I want people to keep in mind, this is a special service district. They have an all volunteer board. We're asking a lot of these folks. There's no one to fire. We ask them a lot to maintain these things. They have their own taxing authority, and they try to do that with volunteer labor and on their own time. And we appreciate what they do, and of course we want to help as a county where we can.
Okay. Is there a need then to perhaps raise the tax levy?
Perhaps. I think that's something we need to discuss with that board.
Okay. Yesterday you held a public hearing on the final site plan for the Nicholas Clubhouse Pool Edition. I think this is a promontory. Did anyone show up?
That's actually today.
Oh, that's today.
Yes, that's
okay.
Today. That's this morning.
Okay. So why is a hearing needed for a project like this, which is basically the master plan is approved?
Yeah, these are most of the ones I do. There are sometimes individuals that show up, whether it's at the canyons or at Promontory or wherever, but it's just part of our process. When doing a plat process, it requires a public hearing.
Okay, and then you're set to approve or deny it?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, let's see. Tomorrow on the agenda in work session, the council will get an update from People's Health Clinics. Mari Lining, is this about the space that may be opening up as we make the move to the Peak Center?
I think that's part of her presentation. I think a lot of the presentation is just an update for the council of how much the need has grown for People's Health Clinic to be continuing to serve the community. I think the numbers have grown. And I think that she'd like to make sure that the council is aware of what the need is. There's a lot of overlap in what People's Health Clinic does and the people's and the health department, but they serve a slightly different community, and she'd like the council to be aware of that.
Yeah, the numbers I read in the report she provided show a 375% increase in patient encounters since the clinic opened in 2009. Yet, occupies the same space as it did when it served only 4,500 patients.
Right, and I think that is a concern that they have. We also have a building here that we've shared for a long time, and we want to be as respectful and aware of the People's Health Clinic's needs as we can. At the same time, we are Summit County. We have a health department that has also needs, and we need to meet those needs first. So the People's Health Clinic you know, it's, they're not on their own. We want to help them as much as we can, but it's also not our responsibility or mission to provide the People's Health Clinic more space. We will do that where we can.
So where's the space going to? I mean, once it opens up?
Well, I think this conversation has started because the health department, we're working on the Peak building over in Kimball Junction, level 2, and we'll be moving some of the administrative side of the health department to that level 2. That's the plan right now. That will free up some space that the People's Health Clinic could occupy. So there's a couple of rooms upstairs where we have shared those for some time. Those will be completely available to the People's Health Clinic, and there's some space downstairs we've made available as well.
Yeah, but this is space that they were already entitled to, and it was actually then adjusted for the health department.
Well, that's not the way I understand it. 9 and 10 has always been a health department's clinical space. We have shared it for some time, mostly on Fridays, but the lease that I understand is not, there was no entitlement to that. They've always had the space they've been entitled to.
Okay, it sounds like there's also, though, a new tenant that is interested in some space there.
Jackie's Recovery?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, well, I think rather than say that Jackie's Recovery is interested in space there, Jackie's Recovery is interested in space anywhere. We have a lease with Jackie's Recovery. They are currently in the basement of the Richens Building. The Richens Building will go away probably in the spring of next year, so we're trying to find them some suitable space. That is one option that they could be in the health department. They do serve behavioral health type services. They have some HIPAA concerns and some requirements, so we're trying to find them some good clinical space, and one of our proposals is for them to be in the basement of the health department as well.
Okay, but again, you're not obligated to provide that space, the county.
We are obligated to provide that space. We have an obligation with them and an agreement with Jackie's Recovery to provide that space. We can get out of that agreement if we so choose, but we currently have an agreement with them.
Okay, but there's also a ground lease between you, the county, Intermountain Healthcare, though, for the health department space. So how could Jackie's Recovery get in there, taken away from what the ground lease would say is, in fact, People's Health Clinic space?
Well, it isn't People's Health Clinic space. It's space that provides a health need. It's not generic. It's not specific to People's Health. So we've had to go through a process with Intermountain where we've asked them to be able to sublease to another tenant. We've done that before, not just for People's Health Clinic. So that would be something we'd have to address with the Intermountain Healthcare when we get there.
Okay, so the county has gotten Intermountain's consent to do that?
Not in this case. We haven't asked their permission yet. We haven't decided where Jackie's Recovery would go. We're actually looking at a couple of other options as well throughout the county.
Okay, and again, this the county pays a lot of money for a behavioral health plan with Huntsman and University of Utah. So do we need a second one like Jackie's?
Well, I think you should ask Jackie's who they are meeting in the community. I think they do a lot of great work. I know they work Monday through Thursday. I hate to pit one good nonprofit against another. I don't think one's doing better or worse than the other. I think they're both meeting some needs in the community. Jackie's Recovery has more of a peer-to-peer model. It's different than what People's Health Clinic or behavioral health in the county does. I also believe that Jackie's Recovery and People's Health Clinic have in the past at least worked together in providing behavioral health services, and they may or may not still do that.
All right, so do we know how many they're helping? Do we have those numbers? I mean, compare, because we do have People's Health Clinic numbers. Yeah.
I know that Aaron Newman in the county, our behavioral health specialist, does have numbers from Jackie's Recovery that he's provided to individuals that have asked, but I certainly don't have those here today.
All right, so when does this get figured out?
Well, we have quite some time still. We have we're still working on the level 2 of the Peak building. We're going to need to go through some sort of a change order or process to get a contractor on board for the level 2 changes. They're much less significant than level 1, but we're hoping to do that in the next couple of months and have some kind of a timing plan for probably wrapping up the whole move by the end of this year.
All right, let's see. The council will also hear from the Hill Group regarding the strategic plan for the seniors program. We're just getting started here, huh?
No, I'd say we're at least halfway through this. We're taking advantage of the Hill Group being in town. They have some engagements on tomorrow and Thursday, one in North Summit and one in South Summit. So they're going to also present to council because they are here. I think I read that they had done 25 unique engagements so far. So I think the fact-finding, gathering of information phase is nearly complete. They're reviewing our current operations, and now I think they've kind of will address tomorrow some emerging trends of what's needed in the county, like transportation or aging in place or housing, and of course they're also evaluating the county because this is not a one size fits all model. Whether you're in Camas or Colville or here in the basin, I think there's very different needs that we need to meet as a county, and I really hope what we get out of this process is a mission and vision for the seniors, some really solid recommendations, and kind of a roadmap. We have every year we go through a process to evaluate senior services in the budget. It'd be nice if the council could look at a proposal or a recommendation and say, does this request that's coming from the seniors or whomever match up with what our strategic plan looks like?
So. Okay. Do you recall what the contract's for? I mean, how much are we paying them?
For this plan, I think it was $30,000.
Okay, and then what will we have, I guess, once they're finished?
And I think it will have a strategic plan. We'll have a strategic plan. It'll be with some recommendations and like I said, hopefully a roadmap of what senior services looks like going forward.
So this is separate from the senior center that's getting built in Park City, right?
Correct. I mean, that's taking into account, and of course they're aware of that, and they'll hopefully make some recommendations when it comes to that too. What do the operations look like? I think there'll come a time when the operations of that senior center will be asked of the county to provide, and whether that's meals or maintenance or whatever, and I think that'll be part of the strategic plan.
Yeah, and we're also looking then at the capacity for the centers in North and South Summit as well.
Correct, that's exactly right.
Okay, let's see, and you say that they are talking to seniors.
Oh yes, they've had several engagements, like I said, 25 unique engagements, and most of those have involved seniors at least being invited to dinner or to come and visit them at a certain time, certain hours to give their feedback.
Okay, then at 4:40, a discussion and possible approval of a memorandum of agreement. This is between Wasatch County, Summit County, and the Black Rock Estates Master Association for the road improvement. I'm assuming we're talking about the Gun Road here.
That's correct. Gun Club Road, this agreement would facilitate the Wakara development in creating a new road that would go about where the Gun Club is, and it would go north through the Ure property. And would access 248 without having to go down 200 South or Gun Club Road past all those residents in Camas. I think this is a really good solution, meeting where the Wasatch County side, it's a lot more dense. And on the Summit County side, this is a lot more rural. These are dirt. It's a dirt road in many cases. And I think those residents would be happy to not have the Wakara development going down their road for their primary access.
Okay, so brand new road. We're not even talking about using what's there.
That's correct. Brand new road to go up through the Ure property. And then we would actually abandon the road that goes through the 200 South road that goes through the Ure property. So essentially those Camas residents would have a sort of a cul-de-sac, a dead end, which I think would be a win-win for everybody.
Okay, what I read is that Wakara will design, engineer, and build this Class B road. So what's the county's responsibility? It's just allowing that to happen?
Allowing that to happen. We'll also approve whatever they do. We made sure there was going to be a trail included on that road. We will actually maintain. We'll push snow on this road, and then we'll bill them for the privilege to do it. So a lot of the holdup on this project, it's been taking about 2 years, has been, how do we make sure the agreement states that in perpetuity, Wakara will pay for this, whether through their HOA? So there's a lot of those details that had to be worked out in the agreement. I think we've worked those out. I think Wasatch County's acknowledged that this is a good agreement. And so I'm hoping we get this wrapped up tomorrow.
Okay, other than just the loss of open space, it's Summit County's not on the line for anything.
Yes, but I would even argue that this isn't the loss of open space, in that we're abandoning as much road as we're creating, and so that it really, to me, allows us to kind of consolidate. If we had that road cut the middle of the Ure Ranch on the north side and the south side of 200 South, and this is going to be now abandoned, where that's all going to be uniform, so we can have trails or whatever we decide to do. It can kind of be more connected, I think. So I think that's kind of exciting.
Okay, then at about 5:10, a presentation on an amendment to the Snyderville Basin Development Code on master plan developments and amendments to the zoning map. So what do these do?
Amendments to the zoning map is something I didn't track. What I saw was the that we're trying to maybe be able to entitle things a little quicker and have less exposure to the applicant. We're not going to require as much of a development plan when they come in. And so that's to me what this item was. But
okay, this is to help move that Klein Dolly parcel as well as another Silver Creek development through?
Well, I'd say not just for that. I think we've had this issue for a very long time. We've required these really fleshed out development plans that were in compliance with our standards before we would actually go through a rezone process. So someone would have to really spend a lot of financial capital on a plan, and then if we were to say no, that's a lost leader for a developer. So we're trying to just get to yes or get to no a little quicker without them having to a lot of exposure to do so.
Okay, so this isn't for specific developments or specific property.
No.
It's not in, preference for any particular development.
Absolutely not, and I think that's probably part of the concern is that this would be for everybody. So that's why we need to really step carefully into this. If you remember, this was on the agenda a couple of weeks ago, and then we pulled it from the agenda, and we're having this work session ahead of a public hearing that we'll have probably next week.
All right, and then finally, a public hearing on Basin Rec's resolution to adopt an impact fee facilities plan. What will this do?
Well, this is a requirement when you do an impact facilities plan to have a public hearing. We are having the bond public hearing next week, so I want to make sure everybody's clear. It is Basin, and we'd invite people to come if they have something to say about the impact facilities plan. But the impact facilities plan sets a requirement for what are the facilities and the capital needs that the Basin has. And then the fee is determined from those needs. So this is going to be a change to impact fees, which is what developers pay when they come into the county. And this will be an important part of Basin's future. In addition to this bond, you can use impact fees for development, and maybe those two facilities are proposing. This could be part of that as well.
Okay. The property tax bills came out since you and I last talked, and things are being done a little bit differently here. I don't know if you noticed, since you don't own the property, but we saw a breakdown, at least somebody sent to me, from the Snyderville Basin. There was like three different bond issues. Usually they've been lumped together. It was just Basin Rec line item. Now we've got, bond A, bond B, So it's like people can see the different bonds.
Well, I don't know if this is specific to what you're asking, but I do know that Basin is proposing to do a new bond that would envelope the old bond as well. So maybe is that what this is about? I actually, you're right. I haven't seen what you're.
I should ask Cindy, I guess, because it was really interesting. I think it was actually a little bit more helpful, but at the same time, I think it was people kind of like, oh wow, I'm paying that much. Yeah.
Maybe it looked a little like sticker shock.
Yeah, just because they didn't realize when they saw it all broken down like that. So, okay.
I haven't seen that. I would acknowledge that we were asking people if they have if they miss a September 15th deadline to appeal their property taxes. Because we passed that ordinance recently, they can still appeal through November 30th. But anybody can get those in before September 15th. We want to encourage them to do so.
Okay, and again, double check the primary or secondary residency.
Absolutely, yes. Yep, we see that a fair amount.
Okay. Shane, anything else?
I could acknowledge that the fair starts on Saturday. Demolition Derby is Saturday. All of the rodeo events are a week from this Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So we're looking forward to that, and we're ramping up, and it's all hands on deck right now.
Okay, I got Tyler coming on in
great.
About 15 minutes. Okay.
Great, glad to hear that.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Leslie.
Youth United is a program offering school-aged children and teens access to sports and recreation. And in the studio to tell us more, I have the executive director of the Park City Community Foundation, Joel Zero, as well as the youth access manager of Youth United, Junior Vieira. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so Joel, Youth United has reported it has surpassed $2 million in grants over the past decade. How is that money raised?
We go on to the community, it's all community supported, and we make the case for how important it is to make sure that all kids, regardless of income, has access to everything that Park City has to offer, and our community steps up.
Yeah, so when the program was launched 10 years ago, it actually had a different name as well, right?
Yeah, it began as the Solomon Fund, and it really focused on K-5, then it grew to K-8, serving primarily Latino kids who were lower income, making sure they had access. We also had a program in the high school, 9-12, and what we did called the Rise Fund. And what we did was we merged the two. So now we have a K-12 continuum of care to make sure every kid in Park City has access to everything it has to offer.
Okay, and explain, why is it housed within the Park City Community Foundation?
It's one of our initiatives. So our main focus is to address the critical challenges facing our community. And one of them is, it's an expensive place to live. Mountain biking, skiing, all the sports and activities, sports and rec, cost a lot of money. And we want to make sure that everybody has access to it. So that's one of the key challenges that, as a community foundation, we've gone deep on to help resolve and make sure everyone has access.
Okay, Junior, so for listeners who may not be familiar with Youth United, tell us, what is it exactly and what do you do?
Yeah, so echoing what Joel said, Youth United is a program that helps kids from pre-K all the way to 12th grade, get them all to sports, rec, extracurricular, or any summer activity. And it's dedicated for all families that are facing financial constraints. And like Joel said, we recognize that Park City is a community built of sports and recreation, and we believe that every kid needs the opportunity and should have the opportunity to have access to whatever they want to participate in.
Okay, so we're talking baseball, soccer, skiing.
Yes, we work with almost every sport, and if there's a sport that a family wants to do that we don't currently work with, we make that connection with the organization, and we connect the families with the organization. We offer skiing, summer camps, cross-country skiing, mountain biking, soccer, basketball. Any activity that a kid desires to participate in or wants to get involved in, we do what we can on our end to get them connected and get them in.
All right. And how many kids do you have participating?
Last year we had a little over 2,000 registrations. Since our inception, we've registered over 11,000 kids.
Wow. And again, all of them receiving something, some financial assistance?
Yes. So we have a grants process, so we encourage a lot of partners who offer youth programming to apply. We have a committee that is filled with previous participants, parents, community members and community leaders, and some staff as well from the foundation. And we review all these applications. We all get together. We have a nice little dinner. And we just go over the applications and we grant out money. This year, we granted out 350 to a little over 29 partners.
That would be 350,000.
Right.
Sorry. Yes.
No, it's all good.
All right. And you mentioned partners. So the money doesn't go directly to the family. It goes directly to the sport organization.
Correct. We don't directly fund families. We grant out to the organizations, and each organization has their own scholarship process. And families are encouraged to apply within the organization's scholarship process, and they go through that. And we walk them through the registration. We understand a lot of our families aren't as tech savvy. So we take the time and walk them through the registration or fill it out for them. And if they don't have any equipment or if they're missing something that they need to participate, we ensure that we get them what they need.
Okay, so yeah, the equipment, the shoes, the lacrosse balls,
the bike, yeah. Skis,
the helmets,
anything.
Yeah. You mentioned $350,000 to 29 partners. How many partner organizations currently participate in the program?
That's for this year. So 29 organizations received funding this year.
Okay. So basically, you know, everyone that's participating, yeah, that's incredible how many different sport organizations there are.
Yeah, and we're growing, you know. Like I said, if we find an organization that offers programming, and we currently don't work with them, but we have a family that's interested in participating in that, we try to make that connection with them, and we try to get familiar with their process, and we try to figure out a system that works for all of us, the families, organization, and us.
Okay. Any idea, you'd mentioned 11,000, again, over the 10 years. I guess... Can you talk a little bit about how that has made a difference?
I try to I do this work because I think a lot about myself. I grew up here, and when I was growing up, there was nothing like Solomon Fund or Youth United that we have today. And to me, I have a strong passion for sports and extracurricular activities. I think they shape your route in a better, or they shape your path in a better route. And I think it teaches more than just the basic game of the activity. It teaches you responsibility. It teaches you how to socialize and make friends. It's way bigger than just the game. And to me, the impact that we've seen, you know, we have family days where we recognize that it wasn't just getting the kids up on the slopes or on the mountain trails. So now we also host family days where we invite the families to also participate. I'm hosting a family bike day soon, and we're inviting parents and kids, especially the ones that are doing mountain biking already. We're encouraging their parents to come, and I'm setting up bike rentals, and we try to get them to also try the activity because we recognize that who doesn't want to go skiing with their family and their parents on a vacation. And so we try our best to also incorporate the parents and give them the opportunity to try out what their kids are doing.
Yeah, so were you in a family that could have used something like this? I mean, so were you basically left out?
I wasn't left out, but I think because my passion for sports, I really went and looked for resources for myself. Whereas today, I try to make sure everybody knows about Youth United, and I encourage anybody who's facing financial constraints to apply, because we'll make it happen. We try to get in every activity possible, and we try to connect those kids with that. And we have a social media that we really promote and put a lot of work into, so I'm hoping that it goes out to all of our community and everybody out there listening to us. If you need this, please reach out to me or apply for the Youth United. Almost every partner organization, if you just mention it to them, they'll be able to guide you through the process.
You know, and I'm thinking of some of the high school programs. I mean, like cheerleading, that's a very expensive program. Is that considered a sport?
Yes. Yeah, so with the high school side, we work with all school-sanctioned sports, so cheerleading, football, lacrosse, wrestling, and then we also work with some of the clubs, like the Park City Mountain Bike Team, which is a great program. And they get the kid any level. They can race if they don't want to, or just train with the team if that's all they want, just be a part of something, which is our biggest mission, is helping these kids find a sense of belonging. And we encourage all the kids to get involved, but we work with school-sanctioned sports, club sports at the high school, and any other organization outside of the school that offers programming, we work with them.
Great. What are the biggest sports, I mean, in terms of participation numbers?
Our biggest sports right now are soccer. For the younger, it's soccer, skiing, and summer camps are very popular due to the crisis in childcare. These summer camps are crucial because they offer a safe place for kids to be at for almost a full work day. And so our summer camps are huge hits, and there's a high demand for them.
Yeah. Joel, I know that Bino Solomon was one of the biggest supporters of the program, hence the Solomon Fund. You've brought in others, though, to support it?
We have, and it wouldn't have happened without Bino, to be honest. She noticed while she was skiing that there are primarily only white folks out skiing. She's like, that's not the only folks that live here. How can we change this? And she really saw that sports can cross racial boundaries, economic boundaries. I love, Junior, that you focused on the sense of values and teams that participating in sports engenders. And it creates a sense of community early on that we quite honestly could model, that they're modeling for us as a broader community. And I think that's just so important, that young people get a sense of how to play well together, how to excel, the discipline of training, and it's just really exciting to be part of it.
Okay, so any plans to expand the program? I mean, you're covering all grades and ages, basically, from preschool on, but to add more partner organizations, you don't really have that need unless somebody asks for it, huh?
Well, that's right. There's still a need. I think a lot of community members still don't know about the program, and they're making choices between staying home from work and caring for their kids, or going to work and making sure their kids have either early childcare or a camp or a sport to go out and play. So I don't think we've hit the limit yet. Not everybody has access. And so this program runs on the generosity of our community. So if you want to learn more about it, reach out to me, reach out to Junior, and we're glad to have a cup of coffee and get you involved.
Okay. And it's a lot like your other funds, right? I mean, it's kind of an endowment fund, and you're able then just to pull the proceeds?
There is both an endowment, but there's also annual fundraising. So we have our fundraising goal, and this year it is $350,000. We're going to hit that goal. We want to overachieve so we can get more kids involved. Even for me, living in Park City can be paycheck to paycheck for a lot of folks. So we want to provide some relief so we've got a thriving community for everyone.
Okay. And again, it's open outside the Park City School District boundaries?
Yes, it's all of Summit County.
Yes, it serves all of Summit County. As for high school, it's just for Park City High School, but anything from K through 8th grade, it's all of Summit County.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just want to take the time, and please encourage anybody who's listening that if you're facing financial constraints and you're on the verge of saying no to your kid participating in an activity, to please reach out to me or check us out at parkcitycf.org and find out more information. Thank you.
Okay. Junior, Joel, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
The Summit County Fair opens this week, and on the phone to tell us more about it, I have Summit County Fair Manager Tyler Olgerl. Good morning, Tyler.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you today?
I'm doing well. So as we heard, it opens Saturday and runs through when?
The following Saturday. We're the 1st through the 8th this year.
Okay. Maybe just give us an overview of what attendees can expect at this year's Summit County Fair.
Perfect. Yeah, so we kick off this Saturday, the 1st, with our demolition derby. Even if you didn't get tickets, we're all sold out right now, but you should still come out. We've got free transportation from the Kimball Junction Transit Center with High Valley Transit. So you can come out, and we'll have a live band going from 5 to 7 p.m., as well as a bunch of free activities for adults and kids throughout the evening. So the demolition derby will be broadcast live onto the big screen, so you definitely don't want to miss it. You want to come out for that. It'll be a good time. Then we roll into next week on Tuesday. We've got our little Buckaroo Rodeo. That's where we do the timed events that night. And then Wednesday night is the little Buckaroo Rodeo main event, where we do all the rough stock. That's where we've got the mutton busting, the calf riding, a bunch of activities for the kids to come out and participate in. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we roll into our PRCA Rodeo. We're really excited about that this year. We're kind of changing things up as far as the program goes. So we're excited to see that be implemented this year.
All right. So tickets needed for the Little Buckaroo Rodeo?
No, Little Buckaroo Rodeo is free. You'll just need tickets for the Demolition Derby and the PRCA Rodeo.
Okay. And you mentioned Derby is sold out. What about the Rodeo?
There's still tickets, limited tickets available for Saturday, Thursday, and Friday. You can still find some pretty good seats.
All right. And when do we start to see all of the homegrown tomatoes and homemade pies show up?
So that, if you want to enter those things, they'll be coming in on Tuesday, the 4th. You can find that schedule on our website. It's in the afternoon, so you can get off work and bring your stuff in. And then the exhibits will open up on Thursday, so they'll be open to the public starting on Thursday.
Okay. So for those like myself, I grow some great tomatoes. But you know what? They're still like 3 inches in diameter because it's so early. I'll never get to win, huh?
Yeah. Well, you bring them over and we'll see. Yeah. I think there's a blue ribbon in your future, Leslie.
No, they're still green. I don't have a chance, but okay. And what are some of those other categories?
Really anything. If you've made a quilt, if your kids have made crafts throughout the summer, really there's a category for everything. So if you have any questions, get on our website and we have a liaison that you can call and ask. But we're not going to turn anything away. We love the participation from the community. We love seeing what everybody's been working on. So if you just bring it over and they'll help you get it entered in the category that it needs to be in.
Okay. Anything different from previous years? New attractions?
We're providing transportation this year. We partnered with High Valley Transit, so we're excited to be providing that free transportation for our ticketed events, the Demolition Derby and the three nights of our PRCA rodeo. And then all throughout the day on Saturday, August 8th, we'll be providing transportation. So you can come out for our parade, you can come out and watch the live entertainment, see either the food vendors, see our commercial vendors, do a little bit of shopping, and see the livestock show. So just see everything that's going on out here. And you can load up at the Kimball Junction Transit Center and ride over here for free. So
yeah. How often are buses leaving?
I believe it's every hour.
Okay. And again, you said that's on High Valley Transit's page or the fare page, web page?
Yeah, it'll be on both, yeah.
All right. Let's see. Any specific events that you want to highlight beyond the ticketed events?
I mean, we always have a lot of fun with our Pet Fest, which is on Wednesday afternoon at noon. That's run by our Summit County Animal Control. And then throughout the day on Thursday, that evening, actually, we've got adult archery competition. Wednesday night, we've got a youth archery competition. So we've got a bunch of different things going on throughout the day, and all those events can be found on the website on our schedule.
Okay, what's the Pet Fest? What happens?
The Pet Fest is where kids can bring out their pet, and they do different competitions. So like dogs, they ask them to sit, they ask them to jump through a little hoop. They've got different things that go on. They've got a look-alike contest, so the kids dress up to look alike with their pet, and it's just really fun. A lot of cute costumes and activities that are going on there.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about any headline events or entertainment acts this year?
So we've got live entertainment going on, like I said, this Saturday with the Demolition Derby. We've got Maddie Wilson coming out from 5 to 7, and then all throughout the day, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, leading up to the PRCA rodeo, we've got live entertainment going on. A lot of local talent that's going to be out here playing, so we're really excited about that.
Okay, and of course, food's a big part of any fair. What kind of food vendors should people expect this year?
We've got a big variety of food vendors. We're going to have the Scone Dots back. We're going to have some great different things. We've got Fry Guys, Donut Vibes. We've got some barbecue. We've got Super Cheesy Food Truck, the Border Food Truck. We're going to have a little pizza and fries, dirty soda and frozen drinks, and then hamburgers from the Lions Club. So we've got a big variety.
Yeah. And what kind of attendance do you get at the fair each year?
That we have the parade and activities all throughout the day. We anticipate between, I don't know, 25,000 to 30,000 people throughout the course of the week.
Okay. And we have talked over the years just about the kind of the master plan that was done. Is that complete, or do we still have more work to do?
So the master plan has kind of evolved as time has gone on. I mean, we still got more work to do. I've been chasing down some grants, trying to get some funding for different projects that we've got around here to help with the flow of different events, and to also invite other events to be able to come in and utilize the venue outside of the fair time. So it's still a work in progress. We've got most of the big projects done. So from here on out, it's going to be some smaller projects that aren't going to be as noticeable. But yeah, we're well on our way to getting that finished up within hopefully the next couple of years.
All right. And can you tell me what's left to do?
So right now we're looking for funding to redo our stadium seating. We want to raise those bleachers up and also increase the height of the arena fence. And then also maybe adding some parking structures over in the field, just some smaller stuff just to help with efficiency.
Okay. And what about the carnival rides? When do they open?
They'll be open on Wednesday night, Wednesday the 5th. They'll be opened up at 5 p.m. and then they'll be running that same time every day for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m.
Okay, and you can buy a wristband or just per ride? Is that how it works?
Yeah, you can buy tickets or you can buy a wristband. The wristband will last you all day. You can buy those on site, yep.
All right, and again, it's all free except for the food and the ticketed events, free parking as well, free transit if you're living in the Snyderville Basin.
Yep, mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else you want to let us know?
No, we're really looking forward to all of our big events. We're going to see some big changes with the PRCA Rodeo, so we're excited about that. You don't want to miss that. Even if you don't have tickets, be sure to come out and watch it on the big screen. We're going to have free activities and stuff going on for you to do. So, yeah, make sure to come out and enjoy the Summit County Fair.
Yeah, you know what I forgot to ask you about is that Junior Livestock Sale, because that happens every year as well. When's that going to be?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, it's a big year this year. I think they've got more exhibitors this year than they have had in previous years. So that's exciting to see. It's a great program where kids, they learn a lot of responsibility and raising the animals and learning how to nourish them and to exercise them. And then they get to come out to the fair. And the first day they're judged on showmanship. So they're judged on their ability to show the animal, to exhibit its characteristics and genes. The second day, Friday, is the confirmation is what it's called. And that's where the judge is going to look at each animal and look at the characteristics of the animal, and they're going to be judged on that. And then Saturday is the junior livestock sale, where all these exhibitors are able to sell their animals on the market. And I can't say enough good about our community and the showing that we have from all of our even individuals, but a lot of businesses, nonprofits. You know, there are just so many people out here that support these kids and are purchasing the animals. So it's a great program. It's a lot of fun to see all the animals here on the fairgrounds. That's something that, yeah, if you're out here, be sure to go over there and check that out.
All right, Tyler, appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Leslie.
Tyler Orgill again is the Summit County Fair Manager. And since you didn't read about it in the local this morning, I'll let you know about a great community event, the Park City Women's Nine-Hole Golf League hosting its 30th annual Rally for a Cure today. And even if you've never picked up a golf club, there are plenty of ways to participate. Park City golf professional Cynthia Brown launched the annual fundraiser 3 decades ago. And since then, the Women's League has raised thousands of dollars to support breast cancer research, early detection, survivor care, and support through a day of golf and community fundraising, a great program. Brown now serves as chair of the nonprofit Playing for Life, which distributes proceeds from the event to Huntsman Cancer Institute, the People's Health Clinic, and Image Reborn. Tournament organizer Callaway Zuccarello says that the fundraiser has grown well beyond its origins.
The way the rally started was it was just the league members who were involved, and it was money raised just by league members playing golf. Whereas our rally today has evolved into an event where anybody can participate, whether they're a golfer or not. So sure, our league members play that day and they make huge contributions, but anybody in the community can swing by and participate in a few things, but mainly our opportunity to draw.
Community members can stop by the golf club today to purchase tickets for the opportunity drawing, which features 9 prize baskets filled with spa, dining, and golf packages. Donations will be accepted until about 6 p.m. Entrants do not need to be present to win. Online donations are also being accepted outside of those times. Last year, the rally raised $22,000. This year, the organizers hope to bring in $25,000. That's about 5 times the amount raised 5 years ago. The Park City Women's Nine-Hole League now has 375 members. League member Kathy Higginson says registration for the league opens each March.
We just have a fun time. There are competitions, but they're not necessarily very serious competitions. We're just out there to have fun. And if you happen to have a lucky day, then you do get paid.
Higginson says the fundraiser also serves as a reminder that 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer during their lifetime. Well, Recycle Utah is temporarily closed, that following an equipment breakdown. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the facility's baler is expected to be back up and running by today or tomorrow.
Recycle Utah unexpectedly closed around noon Monday. Executive Director Andy Hecht said the nonprofit had to close its doors because its baler is broken. That's the nonprofit's workhorse that compresses material into bales.
Monday is by far our busiest day of the week, and we were looking at the rate of material coming in, the volume of material coming in, and we just did not have the capacity to store any more material until that baler is fixed.
Hecht said Recycle Utah doesn't have enough space to hold much extra material. Staff was also getting overloaded. Repairs are expected to be complete by midday Tuesday or Wednesday morning at the latest. Hecht said a closure like this shouldn't happen again. The team plans to buy a new baler next year, which can do double the work.
It was 1997 when this baler was made. It is so old. It should have been retired years ago. I've worked it into next year's budget to secure a new baler.
Hecht said he's also excited for the nonprofit to move into a bigger, permanent home in the next couple of years. A larger space will help prevent the facility from being overloaded. The nonprofit is open Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. and Saturday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Recycle Utah is a financial supporter of KPCW. Christine Weller, KPCW News.